Hi, my name is Sirian Chong, and this summer I did research under the advising of Professor Mark Schinecki and doctoral candidate Keith Frattis on the critical properties of the one-dimensional transverse fields long-range icing model. So to start, I should probably tell you what an icing model is. So in its simplest form, an icing model is just a system with some number of sites, each of which could be spin up or spin down. And it's a simple but applicable model to many problems in physics, such as if you wanted to do Monte Carlo methods on a specific type of icing model so you can get critical temperatures and critical energies where phase transitions happen, which is basically what I did. I found critical temperatures and critical energies of a specific type of icing model to find where the phase transitions were. And this was helpful to my advisor's research in the compatibility between eigenstate thermalization and spontaneous symmetry breaking. And to be more specific, this type of model that was helpful for that was an icing model with five specifications. The first specification was that it's one-dimensional, so that n number of sites, each of which can be spin up or spin down, can be represented as a one-dimensional chain. It was also ferromagnetic, that's the second specification, so that essentially means that it takes the least amount of energy for all the spins to line up or to align spin up or align spin down because it takes less energy for the spins to align. And the third specification was that there's a transverse field term within the Hamiltonian. So the Hamiltonian is just an energy operator equation where you operate on an icing model, you get the total energy back. It's comprised of two summation terms. So the first summation term has to do with the interactions between any two different sites. It has an interaction strength and two poly Z operators. So these poly Z operators, when they operate on a specific site, they return back plus one if it's spin up or minus one if it's spin down. Then you add that summation to the summation of the transverse field term, which has its own transverse field strength and poly X operator, which when it acts on a site, it actually flips the site rather than just returning back a number, which means that this model is quantum mechanical. So the fourth specification is that it has long-range interactions. So that interaction strength you saw earlier can be described by this equation right here. And J sets the overall energy scale, whereas the actual interactions are decaying something like 1 over the distance to the 3/2 power. And that 3/2 power is pretty important because it allows to have phase transition in this one-dimensional icing model. And the periodic boundary conditions just mean that we can represent that one-dimensional chain as a ring where all the sites, the maximum distance between any two sites is at most the system size divided by 2, because you can, say, start at one site, then go counterclockwise or clockwise to reach the other site. So that's all well and good, but now we need to actually find the critical temperatures and critical energies. So in order to start doing that, we need to identify some observables and then quantities that will be helpful for doing that. So the first observable is the magnetization. So it's given by that equation, which essentially is just summing up poly Z operators across every site. And you'll notice that when you take the average magnetization or the expectation value of the magnetization, it will be some non-zero number if it's below the critical temperature or some zero number if it's above the critical temperature. And once we find that, you can start finding the quantity called the Binder cumulate. So the Binder cumulate's nice in that when you plot the Binder cumulate's value across a range of temperatures for different system sizes, if you look at where they intersect, that tells you where the critical temperature is. And similarly to magnetization, it tends to 2/3 if it's below the critical temperature, and it tends to 0 if it's above the critical temperature. So now that's good too, but we now need to actually find those observables and quantities to calculate the critical temperature and critical energy. So the way I did that was I employed some stochastic series expansion quantum Monte Carlo methods, which is essentially just weighted probability-based random samplings of different configurations. And the stochastic series expansion part has the caveat that you also have to consider different powers of the Hamiltonian in addition to the spin configurations. So I mainly did this so I wouldn't have to sample each and every spin configuration because that would take far too long. And I did this through a combination of some translating some base Fortran 77 code and actually writing up and modifying the code in C++. So the general steps to employing and implementing that actual code consists of four things. So first, we actually need to settle on a quantum Monte Carlo variation to use. So I settled down on the stochastic series expansion in quantum Monte Carlo mainly because my advisors told me to. And it generally worked because there was previous work on long-range interactions in a very similar model with this quantum Monte Carlo variant that worked. So it was simple and efficient. So we used it to find expectation values, which is important for those quantities and observables I mentioned before, to calculate the actual critical temperatures and critical energies. And in order to begin writing and running the stochastic series expansion quantum Monte Carlo, you first have to rewrite two functions, the first of which being the Hamiltonian function. So we would take that Hamiltonian function and split it up into four groups of Hamiltonian operators. So as you can see, this one implies that it's the Hamiltonian on two sites numbered zero. That's actually not present within the actual model. It's something that's made for ease of actually implementing and running the code. It's the identity Hamiltonian operator. And similarly, we shift this group of Hamiltonians by a constant just to drastically make the code way more efficient. And we're able to now rewrite the Hamiltonian into this equation. Next, we power series expand the partition function. And the notable thing about this is that we now have this propagation of states term. So as you can see, it's taking a product of the string of Hamiltonians, essentially. And at the end, you see these two are spin configurations. Once the products are done, these spin configurations have to match up. Otherwise, it doesn't really contribute to the Monte Carlo step. So now that we've done all that, we can actually write and run the stochastic series expansion quantum Monte Carlo. So this essentially involves just setting up a temperature loop, and then you get set up the initial configurations, and you go through first some Monte Carlo steps that equilibrate to the specific temperature you need, all the while increasing the number of Hamiltonians in that string or power of Hamiltonians if necessary. And then once it's all settled, you could start measuring the actual observables and quantities you want, the average or expectation value of energy and the Binder cumulate. Keeping in mind that constant shift we did earlier to one of the groups of Hamiltonians. And these two will actually tell us our critical energy and critical temperatures, which is what happened here. I took the Binder cumulants at various transverse field strength values, so 0.5 to 4.5 and 0.5 increments, and I plotted that, the critical temperatures against each transverse field strength to see that the critical temperatures are decreasing as you increase the transverse field strength. Similarly, when you take the average energy or expectation value of energy at that critical temperature, you get the critical energy, and I similarly plotted that against the transverse field strength. So we could see that the critical energies were also decreasing as you increase the transverse field strength. So one weird part about this was that when we got to H equals 4.0 and H equals 4.5, so the transverse field strengths of those numbers, some of these curves started to go down, so not reach to 2/3, but we could basically attribute that to not using large enough system sizes for those specific Binder cumulate values. And we would also notice that once we get to a certain transverse field strength, we would assume that we're going to hit some critical transverse field strength where the phase transitions actually break down and these would not be as helpful anymore. So in conclusion, I found some preliminary results of the critical energies and critical temperatures that I needed. I gave those results to my advisors. This helped them identify points well within the spontaneous symmetry breaking phase for their research on eigenstate thermalization and spontaneous symmetry breaking compatibility. And yeah. I would like to thank these people, the McNair Scholars Program for funding me, Professor Mark Chernicki and Keith Fratis for amazing advising. Thanks.
Coolant can be used to identify these critical temperatures. Maybe I missed something, but where does that come from?
So, sorry, I probably said that a bit fast. So essentially where it comes from is you take the Binder cumulant quantity and plot it against different temperatures for each different system size, so 64, 128, 256, 512, and we see where they intersect. And where they intersect is where we find the critical temperature. So right here, it's probably like 4.9-ish. Right there.
Any other questions? I have a question. So, are there any particular physical systems that you guys are trying to model? Like, so you said it's, you know, there are some things that this applies to. Do you have an experimental example that this model might shed some light on?
So I haven't thought too much about this. I thought more about like when I actually give these results to my advisors. I mean, it's the for eigenstate thermalization. It's you know has to do with thermalizing
sure.
systems. So I mean, it'll be applicable to anything that thermalizes. So yeah, low temperature gases, stuff like that, to improve our understanding of it.
Stacy?
Question. You mentioned that you added a constant to one part of the Hamiltonian to help your code run more efficiently.
Yes.
Was that to avoid wobbling around zero, or?
It was actually to get a zero. So it's right somewhere. So right here. This makes it so whenever you have these Hamiltonians, the only possible value you can get back after you're like propagating through states and stuff is either zero or to JIJ. So that helps like eliminate a lot of calculations, basically.
Okay.